Hare Krishna. So today, being that very most auspicious and wonderful day of Govinda Puja, we will this morning read from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 24, Worshipping Govinda Hill. And we'll read through some of the preliminary parts of this pastime, and we'll see how far we can go and how time allows us before the reading of the deities. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 So, Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 24, Worshipping Govinda Hill, and we'll begin with verse 1. Sri Shuka Uvacha Bhagavan Api Tatraiva Baladevena Samyutta Apashyan Nivasan Gopa Indra Yaga Kritodhyama. Translation: Shukadeva Goswami said, while staying in that very place with his brother Baladev, Lord Krishna happened to see the cowherd men busily arranging for a sacrifice to Indra. In that very place means where the Brahmins had been doing their sacrifice and where the wives of the Brahmins came to offer prasada to Lord Krishna. So, yes. So let's just carry on. Tadadibhyo vi bhagavan sarvatma sarva darshana prashraya vanato prichchad vridda nanda purogama. Being the omniscient supersoul, the Supreme Lord Krishna already understood the situation. Yet he still humbly inquired from the elders, headed by his father, Nanda Maharaj. So, in the previous pastime, with the Brahmins and the Brahmins' wives, the Brahmins, the husbands, they were engaged in a Karmakandya sacrifice, fire sacrifice, actually involving animal sacrifice, and particularly it was for the satisfaction or an attempt to give satisfaction to certain demigods. And Lord Krishna didn't appreciate that. Lord Krishna was concerned that this whole tendency to worship demigods is a deviation, or, well, it's a deviation from the real proper understanding that everything should be offered to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. They may do it in different Vedic ways, and it may be technically correct in a certain sense, but ultimately Lord Krishna, of course, he appeared in this world to teach Sarva Dharma Purucha Mava Ekam Sharana Praja, that everyone should surrender to him, give up other practices and other forms of worship and all different religious and spiritual activities, and just surrender to him and become his devotee. Manmanabhavamadbhakto. This is like the essence of the mission of Lord Krishna when he comes here to this material world. So whenever the Lord would see that certain people were engaging in demigod worship, and it was being or not just demigod worship, but other Vedic, but non-Krishna conscious religious activities, he would become concerned, and sometimes he would take action. So he was concerned after the whole experience with the Brahmins. It was really, at least at a certain point, it was quite unpleasant. And they became, the Brahmins themselves, became offensive to Krishna. Not taking him seriously because they were puffed up by their materialistic religious activities and thinking, who is this little boy? So Lord Krishna had this on his mind at this point here, where now he sees Nanda Maharaj and the cowherd men. They are in the process of preparing for gathering all the different requirements, etc., and just setting everything up for another program of demigod worship of Lord Indra. So he was certainly concerned about that, and therefore he decided to take action and really make a very strong statement that worship of the demigods is not the right thing. But really the right thing is to take up devotional service to himself, to his expansions, to his devotees. This is really what is the correct thing to do. So therefore, seeing the preparations for the Indra Yajna, Lord Krishna intervened with his father very strongly. Let us continue. My dear father, kindly explain to me what this great endeavor of yours is all about. What is it meant to accomplish? If this is a ritual sacrifice, then for whose satisfaction is it intended, and by what means is it going to be executed? Please tell me about it, O Father. I have a great desire to know, and am ready to hear in good faith. Certainly, no secrets are to be kept by saintly personalities who see all others as equal to themselves, who have no conception of mine or another's, and who do not consider who is a friend, who is an enemy, and who is neutral. Lord Krishna, of course, at this stage, he's just a small child. He's about 7 years old. So he's just a small child, at least in South Africa and many other countries. A child would only start a serious program of education when they're 7. Before that, it's just play school and just playing around. It's certainly not a serious program of really learning for the purpose of creating a better future through acquiring material qualification. So Krishna, just as a small boy, and Krishna was feeling that so far in my relationship with my father, we have not really had serious discussions about life and what is it all about and what to do about it. All these subjects, they are things for adults. But it's all been just, you know, the sort of kind of casual interaction of parents with their little children. More or less like that. So, Lord Krishna didn't want that when he asked his father, what is this about, that his father think, oh, it's just that my little boy, and I'll just say some sort of not very serious thing and just sort of just pacify him a little. Krishna wanted to show that I'm really thinking here and I'm capable of understanding, so give me a proper and good answer. So therefore he asked in this way, it's kind of sophisticated. Yes. So then he continues, one who is neutral may be avoided like an enemy, but a friend should be considered like one's own self. This is our little Krishna speaking. That's a pretty philosophical idea. Had you thought like that? You know, sometimes when some conflicts arise between people we know, then, of course, there are two sides, and the people on the two sides may try to enlist us as members of their side, and part of the program of taking action against the other party. But what we see common, it's very common, what we see is that the devotees, when they see that such a situation is there, they try to be neutral. They don't want to take a side. But here Krishna makes, for a child, a very profound point. One who is neutral may be avoided like an enemy. Had you thought in those terms before? Shreya, you're 8. You're even bigger than Krishna was. Maybe we hadn't really thought like that. Better to be neutral. Don't take a side. Be everyone's friend. But the point is that if you are half friends with one side and half friends with the other side, that means you are half an enemy to each side, because you're not fully the friend. So it's like you're half the enemy. And this is what Krishna is saying. One who is neutral may be avoided like an enemy, because the person is half favorable to your enemy. Serious business. Politics. We try to avoid it as much as possible. Okay, so the basic idea, Krishna, of course Krishna is Krishna. He's never just a little child who's just not very competent or, you know, can't really think clearly about complex matters. Krishna is Krishna. And he wants to make some very serious points to convince his father and the other cowherd men that actually it is the wrong understanding that we do this in Vijnanya. We should understand on a higher level. This is his goal, but in order to do that, he has to be able to present himself in such ways that his father and his father's associates will take him seriously and actually listen to what he says and consider it and become convinced. Not just the playful little words of a child. So therefore he's presenting himself like this. When people in this world perform activities, sometimes they understand what they're doing and sometimes they don't. Those who know what they're doing achieve success in their work, whereas ignorant people do not. Of course, that's a very important point. There's a famous saying that where ignorance is bliss, it is folly to be wise. Where, if you're in ignorance, you feel very happy. If you're in such a situation or condition, then to be wise is foolish. How does that sound? Does it sound like a good idea? How could it be wise to be foolish? Anyway, we'll leave that one with you. But this is what Krishna's saying. That let us not just do something just for no reason. Let us become situated in knowledge of what we're doing right now. And then we'll be successful in what we're doing or what we're going to do. Such being the case, this ritualistic endeavor of yours should be clearly explained to me, Krishna, age 7. You have to explain it in very reasonable ways. Is it a ceremony based on a scriptural injunction, or simply a custom of ordinary society? So, Nanda Maharaj responds, Sri Nanda Uvacha, Parijanyo Bhagavan Indra, Megas Tasyatma Murtaya, Te Viva Shanti Bhutana, Prinanam Jivanam Paya. Nanda Maharaj replied, the great Lord Indra is the controller of the rain. The clouds are his personal representatives, and they directly provide rainwater, which gives happiness and sustenance to all creatures. Not only we, my dear son, but also many other men worship him, the Lord and Master of the rain-giving clouds. We offer him grain and other paraphernalia of worship produced through his own discharge in the form of rain. So Nanda Maharaj is taking him reasonably seriously, actually. He doesn't just pat him on the head and tell him, just be a good boy and just go and play with your toys and, you know, let us continue with the real business. He's trying to explain. By accepting the remnants of sacrifices performed to Indra, people sustain their lives and accomplish the threefold aims of religiosity, economic development, and sense gratification, but not liberation, of course. Thus, Lord Indra is the agent responsible for the fruit of success of industrious people. This religious principle is based on sound tradition in the Sanskrit, he uses, Natavaraj uses the word parampara, sound tradition, parampara. This religious principle is based on sound tradition. Anyone who rejects it out of lust, enmity, fear, or greed will certainly fail to achieve good fortune. Yes, so that was Nanda Maharaj's attempt. Well, that was his explanation. Not a very Krishna conscious or God conscious explanation, a very mundane, religious, but mundane religious explanation. We want to eat. And if we're going to eat, we need rain so that we can eat will grow. And so the grass will grow and the cows will eat grass and then we'll get plenty of milk. Because the milk production of the cows depends on, at least such an important factor, how much and what quality of grass they eat. I don't know how many of you are from cow herding backgrounds in North Dean. No, not so much. Unit 5. Maybe in the distant past. Me neither. Well, at least on Cato Ridge, yeah. There we had 30 something cows. Yeah. And we learned because we had to deal with them, the cows. And we would see how, when they were eating nice grass, oh, they produced lots of milk and rich milk. And when they were just sort of out in the felt, just the rough stuff which just grows wherever, they produce milk, but not as much and not such a nice quality. And I remember one of our neighbors, or someone living not far away, who was friendly and supportive of our cow protection program, he saw we were growing wheat at a particular area. We had planted special grass. And it was, and we were watering it and looking after it, and it was growing very lush, very rich green color. And this gentleman came over and he saw that, and oh, he was taken aback. He said, "This is green gold. Yeah, this is green gold because it's so good for the cows. Means we'll get so much milk, which we can sell or use, and, you know, so it's got a financial sort of implication." Okay, so Krishna now replies. When Lord Keshava Krishna heard the statements of his father Nanda and other senior residents of Raja, he addressed his father as follows to arouse anger in Lord Indra. Krishna wants to create a confrontation, like a heavy confrontation, and in this way bring out the truth in very vivid and clear and even dramatic ways by disturbing Lord Indra and then just showing, who is this Indra? What sort of person is this Indra? Lord Krishna says, well, actually, we must now give a little introduction. Lord Krishna is now going to present arguments to Nanda Maharaj why the Indra Puja should not go on But rather, why worship of Govardhan Hill, who we will see is a form of himself, of Lord Krishna, that comes out just as we read through this chapter. So should worship Govardhan Hill, which is a form of himself, and the cows upon whom their lives depend, because they're cow-herding people. Their livelihood comes from the cows. The milk products which either they use themselves or some of which they trade for other necessities, which they're not directly producing themselves, but they trade with people who are producing those things like vegetables and just other necessities of life. So Govardhan Hill, the cows, the Brahmins, who are giving direction how to live, what to do and not to do, in this way avoid becoming implicated in bad karma, and rather just develop a very auspicious life. So it is indirectly or not completely directly drawing their attention to the fact that they should be his devotees via Govardhan Hill, I mean via the example, the idea of worshipping and serving Govardhan Hill. But he's doing it in this slightly, somewhat indirect way, because he doesn't want to say that just manmana bhava manbhakto, he told Arjuna like that. Because the idea with Arjuna is that he should accept Krishna as God, become his devotee, dedicate his life to him. Because Arjuna's situation is in many ways quite different from that of the Brijavasis. Krishna doesn't want to sort of, in some circles they say, come out who he really is, that look, I'm God, okay? I'm God, so just do what I say, okay? Because I'm God, you should just do what I say, and just stop it, this indriyajna. He doesn't want to do that, because if he does that, then there loving relationships with him will become, in a certain sense, adulterated by this mood of just awe and reverence, and you're so important that we must bow down to you. And they'll forget, he is our favorite village boy. They'll forget that he's just this wonderful, wonderful village boy who they love. They'll forget that, and they'll think, we've got to take him very seriously, because he's God. Yeah. No more chastising him for stealing butter. None of that. Whenever he walks by, offer obeisances. And if he walks back 30 seconds later, offer obeisances again. And if he comes by a couple of minutes later, obeisances again. You don't do that with a little child who you love. Am I right? Yeah, it's a completely different relationship. And it's much deeper in terms of affection, love, than just being very respectful and formal. So Krishna doesn't want to put them in such a situation where they start to realize too clearly that he's God and he's not just one of the village boys. He wants to do it to stop the Indra Yajna, but in such a way that they maintain their informal and just very natural loving relationships with him. So therefore, what he does, how he argues to convince them not to do the Indra Yajna, but to do the Indra Puja, and also worship the cows and the Brahmins like that. Krishna presents an illusory philosophy. It is not correct. I mean, there are elements in it which are very convincing, and they sound like, you know, at least they've got a lot to do with the normal understandings of Krishna consciousness, but actually they're not. They're somewhat different, and the differences are very important, like deviations from the truth. You know, of course, if we didn't have Srila Prabhupada to explain that to us, then after reading the next so many verses, we would come out thinking, yes, this is called karma mimamsa. This philosophy that karma is God, this is the truth, and we would have missed the real point. Anyway, let's go through. Lord Krishna said, it is by the force of karma that a living entity takes birth, and it is by karma alone that he meets his destruction. His happiness, distress, fear, and sense of security all arise as the effects of karma. Even if there is some supreme controller who awards all others the results of their activities, he must also depend upon the performers engaging in activity. After all, there is no question of being the bestower of fruit of results unless fruit of activities have actually been performed. So you get the idea. Anyway, let's carry on reading some more verses. Living beings in this world are forced to experience the consequences of their own particular previous work. Since Lord Indra cannot in any way change the destiny of human beings, which is born of their own nature, which is born of their karma, why should people worship him? Every individual is under the control of his own conditioned nature, and thus he must follow that nature. This entire universe, with all its demigods, demons, and human beings, is based on the conditioned nature of the living entities. Because it is karma that causes the conditioned living entity to accept and then give up different high and low grade material bodies, this karma is his enemy, friend, and neutral witness, his spiritual master and controlling lord. Therefore, one should nature, female body, male body, and then of course all the personal details of personality and character. It's all coming from your karma, which is coming from your previous activities. Yeah, that's molding your nature, conditioned nature, this lifetime. And what can Lord Indra do other than make sure you get what you deserve? If you don't deserve something, he doesn't have the right to give it to you. And he won't give it to you, can't give it to you. So really, as Krishna says now, therefore, one should seriously worship work itself. A person should remain in the position corresponding to his nature and should perform his own duty. Indeed, that by which we may live nicely is really our worshipful deity. So you can live nicely by the mercy of your work, the natural type of work that comes to you. And that's really your worshipable deity. If one thing is actually sustaining our life, but we take shelter of something else, how can we achieve any real benefit? We would be like an unfaithful woman who can never achieve any actual benefit by consorting with her paramour. The Brahmin maintains his life by studying and teaching the Vedas. The member of the royal order by protecting the earth, the Vaishya by trade, and the Sudra by serving the higher, twice-born classes. The occupational duties of the Vaishya are conceived in four divisions: farming, commerce, cow protection, and money lending. Out of these, we as a community are always engaged in cow protection. So then, my dear father, our home is not in cities or towns or villages, being forest dwellers. We always live in the forest and on the hills. Therefore, may a sacrifice for the pleasure of the cows, the Brahmins, and Govardhan Hill begin. With all the paraphernalia collected for worshipping Indra, let this sacrifice be performed instead. Because our work, what we are dependent on, the cows are our life. Through their mercy we are living. And the cows are dependent on Govardhan Hill, because they go there every day to eat grass. So we must worship the cows. They're like the foundation of our lives. And we must worship Govardhan Hill, because the cows are sustained by the grass on Govardhan Hill. And then, of course, the Brahmins are directing us in our lives. So, let's do like that. Let many different kinds of food be cooked, from sweet rice to vegetable soups. Incidentally and interestingly, the Sanskrit word for soup, do you know what it is? Soup. Or supa. Supa. Soup, yes. Make many kinds of fancy cakes, both baked and fried, should be prepared. And all the available milk products should be taken for this sacrifice. The Brahmins who learn the Vedic mantras must properly invoke the sacrificial fires. Then we should feed the priests with nicely prepared food and reward them with cows and other gifts. After giving the appropriate food to everyone else, including such fallen souls as dogs and dog eaters, you should give grass to the cows and then present your respectful offerings to go the downhill. After everyone has eaten to his satisfaction, you should all dress and decorate yourselves handsomely. Smear your bodies with sandalwood paste, and then circumambulate the cows, the brahmins, the sacrificial fires, and go the downhill. This is my idea, Ananda, and you may carry it out if it appeals to you. Such a sacrifice will be very dear to the cows, the brahmins, and go the downhill. And also to me. Shukadeva Goswami said, Lord Krishna, who is himself powerful time, desired to destroy the false pride of Lord Indra. When Nanda and the other senior men of Vrindavan heard Sri Krishna's statement, they accepted his words as proper. So they did that. They arranged for the Brahmins to recite the mantras. They took all everything intended for Indra's sacrifice and offered it to Govardhan Hill. And the Brahmins, they gave grass to the cows. Then, placing the cows, bulls, and calves in front of them, they circumambulated Govardhan. Sri Giri Govardhan ki
jai.
Sri Govardhan Puja Mahotsava ki
jai.
Gaur Premanande. So tune in a little later